Thank you, sir. Thank you, and good evening, one and all, and welcome to the Maine Outdoors, Maine's longest-running outdoor talk radio program. And you're listening to us on WVOM, the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 101.3 and 103.9 in the Queen City. And we are a talk show, as you know, and we welcome you to take part in our program. What's the number, Catherine?
The number is 1-800-966-1039.
All right, and now we'll introduce our special studio guest in just a moment. First, a little shout-out I want to make to a person listening in Punta Gorda, Florida.
Oh, wow. Imagine that. That's far away.
Streaming down there, the Geike family is tuning us in, I heard, tonight. So we welcome them to our show. And also want to say hi to the famous deer camp up at Sebois Lake. The Skulkers of Sebois
are
tuned in tonight, around the poker table, probably. And we want to say hi to them. That would be Phil, Scotty, and Mark. And we welcome them to our show as well. And we pray we have good deer hunting this week. Let's see, our guest tonight, first the crew, the guy behind the controls in the operations center, he is called sometimes, you probably didn't know this, Catherine.
What do you call him?
His nickname is the Phantom Angler of Grand Lake Stream.
I might have heard that before.
He's the dam pool Phantom Angler. He fishes until midnight. The only guy that does it. Nobody can figure out how he can see the fly going back and forth.
I know. I hear he catches a lot of fish that way, though.
He does well. He does pretty well.
Cat's out of the bag.
Cat's out of the bag, yeah. And, of course, our co-host. And we want to thank her for filling in for a couple of weeks. She did a great job, Catherine.
Well, thanks.
She's the Maine.
I'm glad to have you back, though.
Nice to be back. It really is. She's a Maine guide. She's an avid outdoors woman, and she hails from one of my favorite places, Aroostook County, Catherine Gordon.
Yeah, it's great to be here, really. But it's wonderful to have you here. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Coming. So nice to be back.
Yeah.
Our guest tonight is, I met him at a book signing up at... Was it Old Town Trading Post, right?
Yeah.
And we started talking shop, and I thought it was fascinating that he's done so many books, and he does a great job. I just finished his second book called Life in the Backwoods. His name is Norman Kalick, and he lives in St. George.
Correct.
Right. Nice to have you here, Norm.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Loved your book. I finished it this afternoon. We'll talk about it in just a couple minutes.
Very good.
All right. And again, a phone number is what, Catherine?
It is 1-800-966-1039.
That's right. And we remind you, too, we're also streaming online. We have people listening all over the world. And if you have friends in faraway places who'd like to connect with the state of Maine and the great outdoors, they can tune us in on the WVOM website. Did I get that right, Norm?
Yep.
Yeah.
Worked last week.
You did.
Hey, good.
Yeah. Okay. I want to also remind you this show is sponsored in part every week by the Northwood Sporting Journal, my favorite outdoor publication. And I also have another book out, by the way, Norm. Just put it out. It's called Deer Hunter's Digest. It's 100 chapters of the best deer hunting articles that I've ever read. Of course, I'm in there too. But it's a great, great book. Make a great Christmas gift if you have a loved one who's an avid hunter. This is the type of book they'd enjoy, and a lot of reading. It's 340 pages, something like that. It's a real tome. So tome, is that the right word? Tome. Right?
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it's Hunter's Digest. You'll see it added in the Northwood Sporting Journal in the December issue. Check it out, and if you have a friend who likes to read about hunting, I recommend the book to them. Let's see, a couple of other things. This was unbelievable, Catherine. You couldn't believe this. You remember the gill netter up in McGalloway?
Yeah, I don't think they found that person.
They haven't caught him.
Terrible.
And they had a $2,000 reward offered. Somebody put a gill net in the McGalloway River, and... the wardens weren't too pleased, and they've been trying to find the culprits, and they haven't found those. But then out of the blue, last week, down on Mount Desert Island, some rascals killed two deer at night.
Oh, that's awful.
And severed the head off one of them. Anyway, the Maine Warden Service...
It is a waste. Yeah, it makes me
terrible.
So sad.
Yeah,
yeah, sad.
Can't imagine people would do something like that. But anyway, there's a reward offered. I think it's like... Here it is right here. $4,000 reward offered to any information leading to the prosecution of whoever committed this act. It happened on October 5th, early morning hours of October 6th. Large buck was shot and killed at night in the town of Mount Desert. Deer was shot and left to rot. Discovered in the morning of October 6th. The second deer, which was a large buck, was shot in the same day in the town of Tremont, which is on the island, and apparently the head was cut off the deer. Unbelievable. Anyway, there's a $4,000 reward offered. If you have information about this, contact your warden service or Operation Game Thief, and the telephone number is 1-800-ALERT-US. 1-800-ALERT-US. That's Operation Game Thief, if you have any information leading to the arrest in that particular case. The other thing which I thought was interesting, Catherine, Maine Warden Service is recruiting for deputy game wardens.
I did see that. That would be a very cool job for
have
people.
Have you thought about that?
No, I'm so busy doing my own thing now.
Anyway.
But it would be a great job. Yeah.
If it's somebody who's had a hankering to maybe apply for the warden service, this is a great way to find out if you're really interested in it. And they're going to be accepting applications for positions. And what happens, you'll start in May. And they're mainly being used for enforcing boating regulations. And their hiring process is open until December 20. So if you're interested in being a deputy game warden, and you don't have to go to the academy to do this, they will check you out. You get a uniform and a chance to support the Maine Warden Service during the summer to enforce boating regulations. If you're interested, get in touch with the Maine Warden Service. I don't have the exact number on this press release, but I do, because I worked there for a few years. Up here in my mind, I have the exact number. You can call a switchboard at IFNW. Norm knows what that number is. Oh, you don't?
I don't.
Oh. Well, you know, because you've been connected with them for a long time, right?
I do not know their
number. You don't know their number. Well,
I'm lucky I know our number.
Okay. Well, it's right up here. It's 287-8000.
Oh, of course.
So you folks at home, if you're interested in applying for a deputy game warden job, 287-8000. Call them tomorrow morning, and they'll tell you how to get in touch with the Maine Warden Service. And I think, did you have anything for Outdoor Trivia Questions? I mean, for Outdoor Digest?
No, I did not.
No, okay. No. Did you get your deer yet?
No. I haven't.
You haven't been hunting?
No, but you've been away. But what happened was I hurt my back. I'm doing like the physical therapy and all the pain management stuff. So I have not gotten out in the woods. It's very sad. I'm kind of a little depressed about it.
That's tough. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but it's okay. You know, I think by next week I'll be able to get out and...
Yeah.
Hopefully, see a little something, something.
You had some therapy on that probably, huh?
Yeah, doing a little PT
I've had that. It's not fun.
No, but it's all right.
All right.
Hanging tough.
I hope you get better.
Thank you.
Okay, I think that concludes Outdoor Digest, unless you have anything, Norm?
I did actually. I see down here you have the meat consumption advisory.
Oh, yes, that's right. Thank you. Yeah, I want to mention that. We got plenty of time. A guy calls me the other day. He didn't want me to mention his name, but he said I could use his initials. His initials are KR, and he's up in Oakland. Oakfield's in the county, right? Yeah, Oakfield's right. In the county, and Oakland is over by Waterville.
Right.
So this guy calls me up, and he said, I want your opinion, Mr. Reynolds. He said, I shot a deer, nice buck, nice little buck, had it processed, put it in the freezer, and it's delicious, but my wife won't eat it. And he said, because she's concerned about seeing the articles about they call them the forever chemicals that are in the soil. Mm-hmm. And
they expanded it more this year with more towns, around Unity and everything.
Yes, Skowhegan, Unity, and one other area. And so he asked me for my advice. And I said, well, I'm not a scientist. And I know that the forever chemicals are in the blood of every American today because of the food stuff. We're all carrying it around right now. We don't know it. So what's a little few more?
But exactly.
Anyway, so I said, where'd you shoot the deer? Did you shoot it in Skowhegan or Unity? No. He said, I shot it up in Rome.
Oh, for God's sakes.
I said, you shot it in Rome? I said, would you like to get rid of that meat?
I was going to say, if he doesn't want it, we'll take it.
Yeah,
I'll eat it.
I'll drive right over and pick it up right now, Mr. KR. And he said, you've answered my question. He said, do you mind if I tell my wife that you're willing to take the meat and eat it? I said, yeah, just go ahead and tell her. And so I said, well, how about going on the radio and talk about this? He said, no, I don't want to do that. But he says, I'd like to have you discuss it. So maybe one of these times we can get somebody from the CDC.
Oh, that would
come
be
on and talk about this. Because the thing, I did a little research, Catherine, and the thing is, they don't know. There's a lot they don't know about this. They just know it ain't good for you, right? Mm-hmm. but they can't tell you what the levels are. In 3 out of 10 deer in Skowhegan had these forever chemicals in their meat, but some of the domestic beef that you buy at the supermarket probably has some of this in it as well.
So I took a cattle nutrition course one time, and I walked away from the course saying, we're consuming beef that it's the name of the game is let's not kill the consumer too quickly.
Yeah, because you're saying they put like cardboard and who knows what chemicals was in the cardboard and they were putting that in the feed, right?
Yeah, there was a place that didn't have any to speak of, not a whole lot of hay.
Yeah.
And so when you're commercially feeding, you've already you've already figured out what the food ration is, nutritional ration. And so a cattle, because of rumen, needs to be able to float the bacteria that digests the food. And that's why they need the roughage.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Port. We appreciate him. He's very knowledgeable.
It was. I thought that was like so interesting. So when Norm told me that story, I'm like, well, I'll just eat anything. Because,
Well, you know what the secret is? Vary your diet. Yep. Don't eat venison, every day of the week. Right. Don't eat black bass every day of the week. Right. You got to vary your diet. Right. I think it's the safest thing to do. Anyway, we'll get a scientist on to help you explain that, Norm, next time. Maybe next week.
I think Norm did a good job explaining that.
I thought he did, too. No, I wasn't putting him down. I thought it was excellent.
Well, yeah, I was surprised when I walked away from that course. I went, you got to be kidding.
Yeah, scary, really, but they... Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll pursue that maybe next week or the week after. Anyway, that concludes Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. Our guest tonight, again, if you joined us late, is Norm Kalik. He has a wonderful new book. He actually has 5 books. I've only read one of them. The one I've read is very enjoyable, called Life in the Backwoods, and we're going to pursue that with him in just a second. First, though, we know you wait every week with bated breath for the outdoor trivia question. And I was going to have Norm read it, but I forgot to give him a copy of the script. So I guess I'm going to let Catherine read this out. And Norman he's graciously agreed to give you a copy of this book called Life in the Backwoods, in a novel he's written. It's a wonderful book based up in the Flagstaff area. And he'll give you a copy of the book if you know the answer to Catherine's question.
Now, I have the question, but Norm has the answer. So when the caller calls in, he can tell you whether it's or not.
Yeah. You can be the judge, Norm.
He'll be the judge. Okay. What was the name of the town that was flooded and abandoned when the north and south branches of the Dead River were dammed? And who was the famous Revolutionary War figure who camped there on his way to Quebec?
Okay, we ought to do that one more time.
Okay, here we go.
it's a little complicated.
It is. Two-parter.
Yep.
Okay, the name of the town that was flooded over and abandoned when the north and south branches of the Dead River were dammed, and who was the famous Revolutionary War figure who camped there on his way to Quebec.
All right. You cogitate on that. 1-800-966-1039 is the number, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and Justice Kalik is standing by. He wants you to answer his question. And before the break there, Catherine read it again. We're looking for the name of the town that was flooded when they flooded. They dammed the was it Long Falls Dam?
That's where did the
on the Dead River. We want the name of the town, and we also want you to tell us who the Revolutionary War figure was who camped out at this particular town. We have a caller. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors. Your name and where are you calling from, please?
Sean from Moscow.
Okay, Sean. What do you think the answer is, sir?
Well, I believe the town was Flagstaff.
That's correct.
All right.
And the revolutionary general who turned traitor was Benedict Arnold.
Yay!
Benedict Arnold is correct.
So, does he get a book?
He gets a book.
All right.
We'll get his address, and I'll send it out to him.
All right.
And autograph it, too. We autograph
it. I will.
Him. Yeah, good.
Yes, that'll be worth more on eBay.
Well, thank you, Sean. That is actually the correct answer. And you have won a copy of Norm's book. And we want you to stay on the line so Norm can get your mailing address. And Norm Kalik will mail the book to you, all right?
Okay. By the way, I want to welcome you back, Vipo. Good to have you back.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. It's great to be back. Thank you. And anything else on your mind tonight, Sean? Hello?
I think Norm cut him off.
Well, that's not good.
Sorry.
Sorry, Sean, I think we lost you.
We did.
So you might want to call back so Norm can get your...
Oh, he has him back?
Oh, Norm has him, but we don't. Norm has him, but we don't.
Oh, that, no.
So that's okay. All right, long as he gets the book, that'd be great. And we'll get the address for you. All right, let's get down to brass tacks here. Norman Kalick, again, I met you at a book signing at the Old Town Trading Post back earlier this fall. And you graciously gave me a copy of your book, which I finished today and enjoyed it so much. I took it out in the woods with me while I was waiting in my little ground blind. And it helped to pass the time, and I really enjoyed it. Before we get to probing through the book, but let's start by maybe telling our listeners a little bit about yourself, how you got interested in writing, what your professional background is, and Catherine is just fascinated to death with the fact that you lived off the grid.
I am. That does.
Was this with your wife or your dog or what?
All of the above.
All of the above, okay. All right, tell us a little bit about yourself, would you?
Well, I was born and raised in Rockland.
Yeah.
I graduated from Rockland High School back in 1962. Some people think it was 1862, but I went to the University of Maine, got a degree in agronomy in 1966, and started a career. At that time, it was called the Soil Conservation Service.
Mm-hmm.
And I then it became the Natural Resources Conservation Service. And I started in Farmington, and then I went to Aroostook County, Caribou, the Northern Maine Regional Planning Commission. And then from there, I went to South Paris, Soil Surveys, and then to Lewiston and Bangor, Arno, and actually retired from Bangor.
So you're like a soil conservation person?
Right. Well, I was in the mapping soils.
Mapping soils?
It was a great job in the field. When I took an office job, spring came, and I looked out the window and said, "What have I done?"
I bet.
It turned out right.
Yeah. And you an outdoors person? You like to hike?
Oh, yes.
You hunt or fish or do anything like that?
Not so much deer hunting, used to, but definitely partridge hunting.
That's my favorite, too.
Yeah. Don't do any grouse hunting, but I do partridge
hunting. All right. That's awesome.
So, yes, we both my wife and I. And fishing, of course.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And how did you happen to get into... Now, you started writing late in life?
Yes, it is. It was. When I was working, it was mainly, reports, technical-type work.
Dry-type reports?
Very much. C-graphs. But it was after I retired, and when we were living at West Kerry Pond, and we did so for 10 years, that I just liked the area. I liked the Dead River area. I liked the Kerry Ponds.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there was a sporting camp there, and it was West Kerry Pond Sporting Camps, and it was originally started in the early 1900s, different set of camps, they burned.
Yeah.
And the history is familiar, and I knew some people that go way back, and they explained it all to me. So I got interested in that, and I didn't want to do a history of the camps, but I wanted to kind of bring it into a story, make it interesting. So... I came up with the idea of maybe having these people buy this backwoods sporting camps and follow them through the process of how they got it and the whole thing. And then all the way through the text, if you know the geography of that area, when I talk about some Dead River, Bigelow Plantation, Flagstaff, the light goes on, they know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
So... to me, the geography is very important. If I understand what the geography is, then it makes the book much more interesting. So that's the avenue I took.
So it's like a historical fiction, would you call it?
My first book is definitely historical fiction.
Yeah.
This one, you could go either way. It's certainly based on an entity that actually existed. And in the epilogue, I talk about how how were the fictional characters ended up not running the camps more, but also how the real operators was Adelaide and Elwin Story, how they ended up time at West Kerry Pond. And that was the end of the era. That ended the sporting camps.
So when you dreamed this book up, did you write a storyline or did you just start writing?
Basically without a net. Some people, I understand, they have to have a very detailed where this thing's going.
Yep.
I don't do it that way.
You didn't do like a timeline, a chronology?
Well, I knew what I wanted to do.
Just in your head?
But, you know, yeah. You know, obviously I had a rough idea of what was going to happen. But usually, well, the interesting thing to me about writing is that, you know, you sit down in the evening and you think you know what you're going to do. And you spend 2 or 3 hours and you get all done and you look back and say, I never dreamed that's what was going to happen. To me, that just that...
Is that what makes it fun for you?
I think it is. It really is. Yeah. I look back and I'm like, God, I thought I was going this direction.
That's
so
cool.
You're not sure yourself where it's going to go sometimes.
Oh, no.
That's fascinating.
No. You I get the big picture, but I mean, you know, on the chapter level, things go in different directions.
Well, I really like the book. I like any Maine book that's about Maine, and you get into the geography and the history and the way you weaved it in. It's just wonderful. I just enjoyed it immensely, and I know you're going to like it too, Catherine.
I can't wait to read it. I've got it right here. I'm excited.
Yeah. I'm a writer, but I've never written a novel, and because I can't think up a good idea. That's amazing. I know I could write it if I could just come up with a decent idea. And I asked that to Claire. I said, Paul, all you got to do is find a body. Yeah. And you have a body in your book.
Oh, that's true.
There you go.
That's true.
Now, did you get that idea from Claire, or did you know you had to have a body?
I knew I had to have a body. I want to talk about the area, but I didn't want it just to be, kind of plain.
Yeah.
So a body always livens it up. Mm. So in this book, it's like two parts. One is the folks that lose their job in Lowell, Massachusetts in 1936. On the side, the husband doesn't tell his wife, but he says his fantasy that he's going to buy the camp in the woods somewhere. Well, he lost his job at the Merrimack Manufacturing Company, and he took the opportunity to go to Maine and responded to an ad.
Yeah.
Anyway, so long story short is when he got home, he had to tell his wife what he did. And she went ballistic.
Yeah, I know.
Absolutely ballistic.
And that's what makes the book so, it's so compelling and I don't know what the correct word is. It's very believable the way you've crafted it. Did you share this with your wife or did you dream this up on your own?
I dreamed it up, but every so often she reads some sections, and I get comments back. But she could relate to that part of it.
Yeah.
It's like we went to West Carrollton. We sold our house in Hamden, and then before we buy permanently a house, why don't we go up and spend a little time in West Carry? Well, we spent 10 years there, year round, and. Well, I think she liked it. She may call in a minute. So she did.
So you decided when you retired to get off the grid?
Yes.
Why West Carry Pond? What was the contact there?
That's a good question. It goes back to 1968 when we bought a lot up there.
Mm-hmm.
These camps, West Carry Pond's fishing camps, had just... was in the process of closing, and new owners taking over to subdivide it.
Is that like I was going to look at that in DeLorme, and I didn't get a chance, but is that near Flagstaff Lake?
Yes. Yeah.
Is it a little trout pond there?
Yeah, it's about a square mile. It's about 620 acres.
Is it a small pond, yeah?
Yeah, quite deep. It's 90 feet.
Yeah.
So
why did you pick that spot?
Well, we stayed at those camps.
You what?
We stayed at the camp.
Oh, the sporting camp.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And we knew it was coming up. And back then, it was very reasonable. I first saw it was $1,500. But even then, I was making $100 a week.
Yeah.
So my father had a whole life insurance policy. So I cashed it in, and I think I get half it out of that.
Well, that's what the guy in the book did.
That's right. That's right.
So this was you.
That was me.
Oh, yeah. I'll be doggone. All right. Yeah. So a lot of this in the book was really Norman Kalik.
Yep. Particularly in the epilogue.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
But so it worked out pretty well.
So this wasn't a sporting camp you bought.
No. It was the end of the era.
It was a lot.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
And... part of the sporting camps, the Stories are Coopers in my book.
Mm-hmm.
They own about 55 acres. And so we bought one at that time, half an acre.
Yeah.
And then over time, we bought another lot. Mm-hmm. My wife's father bought a lot and didn't think the fishing was a great place, gone to heck in a handbasket and all that.
Yeah.
So we bought that. And then another opportunity came up, so we moved north. And I figured I lived to be about 1,100 years old, would be at the north end of the swamp. We are going in that direction. But I think we've gone about far enough.
Yeah, yeah. So when you say you lived off the grid up there, did you use gas lights or you have generator?
We had both. Mm-hmm. Solar.
Oh, solar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Small, photovoltaic.
Yeah.
We ran everything, the pumps and heavy-duty stuff with the generator.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
So when you say you run everything, that must mean like you're, like, I'm a girl that loves the outdoors, I'm not going to lie, but I want a place where I can plug in my hair dryer and my curling iron.
No problem.
Okay, good, good.
Just don't make the mistake of using the wrong outlet.
A main guide with a hair dryer?
I know.
We're constantly doing that. My wife, we have a duplicate set of outlets. One is solar, one is generator.
Okay.
Yeah. And when it comes to the vacuum, you got to make sure you read what the little cover says. You don't blow a fuse and have to start over.
We're going to have to take a commercial break. We're capitalists here. We have to do it.
Nothing wrong with that.
And you folks at home now, Norman is a friendly guy. And if you're fascinated with his writing, you want to ask him a question, what's the number, Catherine?
It is 1-800-966-1039.
Okay, you stay with us and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and our special studio guest tonight, if you joined us late, is Norm Kalick. Norman has written a book called Life in the Backwoods, and it's all about a sporting camp operation up on Flagstaff Lake, and just fascinating geography and history, and I think you'd enjoy the book. He has four other books, and before we forget to do it, what are the four other books, Norman? How do people go about getting them?
Okay. The first one actually was called... A Long Way to Walk,
mm-hmm.
and that is historical fiction.
What's that about?
That is about a family, this is 1783, true story. It was about a young family in England, Seathwaite, England, that was forced to leave the farm. There's so many of them, and they raised sheep in the hill country near the Scottish border. And there's three brothers and then the father. But anyway, things were shifting from wool more to cotton, and so the demand for the price dropped.
Yeah.
And so two of the brothers decided they would let the father and the other brother have the farm. They would go somewhere else, try to make a living. So they decided to go to the United States at first. One of the brothers went to New Gloucester. The second one, who's the main character, Robert Forbes, he was going to go with his brother, and then... coincidentally, he ran into somebody and said, you want to go to Quebec. I made all this money in the sawmill. And he said, that's where you make your fortune. So he made a 90-degree turn, which was a pretty stupid thing to do.
Yeah.
he had no trade. Demand for sheep herders in Quebec City wasn't
very low.
Great.
Yeah.
A story is about, he can't stay there. There's no money. They can't afford to go back to England. They need to join his brother. So they hear about this Native American footpath that goes from the south side of the St. Lawrence to the Kennebec River, roughly where Kerritonk is on the other side.
Yeah.
Which happens to be the same trail that Benedict Arnold and the Army of 1,100 men went south to north. They went from north to south.
So this trail exists today?
The Arnold Expedition Historical Society is trying to maintain that trail.
There is a trail?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can, I'll go off slight diversion here, but you can actually hike from the Kennebec across the Great Carrying Place, 12 and a half miles, basically following the same route that Arnold and the Army followed in fall of 1775. And it would be the same route that the Forbes family in A Long Way to Walk, would have reached the Kennebec River.
This goes by the Chain of Ponds?
Yeah, it does.
It does. So the Long Walk, the title of the book, was going from Quebec back to Maine?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Roughly 150 miles of wilderness.
And so what's the drama that happens? You don't have to do the whole book. But
I know. I always get told.
He gets in trouble on the Long Walk?
I spill the beans too much, but I love talking about it.
Does he get in trouble on the Long Walk?
Big trouble.
Is there a body involved in this book?
Yeah, and it's a fam- There is. It's really a tragic story.
Yeah.
It's how I found it. I went online and I ended up reading this reprint of an article that was published in 1794 about the Forbes family leaving England, doing this trip, a trek that we just talked about.
So that was the spark for the book.
Oh yeah, it was the outline.
Oh, fantastic.
Absolute outline. The other one, I said, I've known that. This one, I did have a written outline, and of course embellished it.
Yeah.
But it was tragic in the fact that there was four young children involved, mother and father. They were got in over the head, advised not to do this.
Yeah.
But he was the smartest man in the room.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
And anyway... you know where St. George's is, Quebec?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that back in the 1700s, that was Sardegan. It was a remote area. And there was a lot of backward French people, outcasts, really, that settled there.
These are some of Norm's relatives, right?
I have to remember which Norm we're talking about.
Oh, no, the other Norm.
Oh, okay, okay. They... When Allen went north, of course he thought he was going. He could do it in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it was a lot longer than 2 weeks. They ran. Everybody knows the story about Allen.
Oh yeah.
Food and the whole thing.
Oh,
but
people died and froze to death.
Oh yes,
and starved
about
to death.
40 people.
Oh yeah.
It's probably one of the best adventure stories ever to come out.
Oh, yeah.
Of the Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was. It's a thriller.
Yeah.
It really is.
Are you a student of Benedict Arnold?
I'm very interested in Benedict Arnold.
Isn't it true, I read some about, he kind of got screwed over, didn't he?
Yes.
And that's why he turned.
Right.
He was quite a general. I mean, the guy was smart, wouldn't you say?
He was smart. He was only a colonel. That was part of the problem.
He didn't get promoted like he wanted to.
Promoted.
Had a big ego. Yeah.
Very big ego.
Yeah.
And very stubborn, outspoken.
Yeah.
That was kind of worked against him.
Yeah.
He never had any support because of his, I'll call it, attitude. You know?
Yeah.
And he didn't come from a particularly high class family.
Yeah.
And so.
He's not in the book, though, Benedict.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. He isn't, but in A Long Way to Walk, in the end, there's a session called Notes and Quotes.
Mm-hmm.
So when my family, the Forbes family, tried to get through the wilderness and survive, they encountered the same physical obstacles that Arnold and his army did going north.
Yeah.
Waterfalls, rapids. So you can read the diaries. You can go to arnoldsmarch.org, and a lot of the diaries are there, and you can read them. So when my family came to, say, a certain waterfall, you know, they had to get around it going south. Well, if you go into the diaries, you'd look, see how Arnold, when he approached it, what he went through, contortions he had to do to get the army in the 200 bateaux.
Big bateaux, yeah, those big.
And so to that point, it mentions Arnold and the trip, but the story is not about, per se, Benedict Arnold.
Yeah. If somebody wants to get a copy of that book or any of these books, how do they get them?
Funny you should ask.
Okay.
I know the show has a long reach, so I'll give you several.
Okay,
places.
Sure, yeah.
Locally, Old Town Trading Post and the Ampersand, Orono.
Yep.
Midcoast, Washington General Store, Jefferson General Store, Moody's Gift Shop, Rangeley Region Sports Shop, Pelicon, I think that's how you pronounce it, around the corner.
Yep.
River's Edge Sports in Quasic. And I've done real well in along 201. Stacy Earl, who runs the Bingham General Store, really sells a lot of books there. Barry's Store in the West Fox and Bishop's.
What if somebody want to call you and order a book directly? Can they do that?
Sure.
What's your contact? You got an email or you want to put out a phone number?
Email's best.
Email? What's your email address?
Pondstream, one word, at yahoo.com.
Like P-O-N-D, Pond?
Yep.
Pondstream.
Yep. Yeah, at Yahoo.
At yahoo.com.
Yep.
And they could email you and contact and arrange to buy a book.
Yeah, I prefer they went to the retailer.
Yeah.
That would be my first choice.
Okay.
you know, because they're good enough to sell my books.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I want a short circuit.
Yeah, yeah.
So that if they're in Farmington, they sell them at Twice Sold Tales.
Yeah.
There's a host of areas. You can buy them at Sherman's.
Okay.
They're online, but, you know, I'm like a lot of people. If I write a local book, a main book, it's nice to buy it from a main store.
Yeah, that is nice. Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
But Old Town Trading Post carries all five or just?
Four.
I'll
just, that's 45th Parallel. That was my second book. I think it's a wonderful story. I wish I had done a different cover and not use that title. It sounds like a wall book.
But, yeah.
But that one starts at Midcoast. It's about this fellow retires from the Merchant Marines, and he's got an ego bigger than Arnold's. And anyway, he's not happy with his Merchant Marine pension, so he gets involved selling drugs on the coast. Gets in some trouble with the guys he's dealing with. He ends up in Bingham to set up an operation in Bingham.
Is there a body in that book?
Well, yes, there is.
That's the key, Paul. Well, you got to get a body.
You got to have a body.
Got to get a body in that book, yeah.
That is fiction, but there's a lot of truth to this person, what happened.
Yeah.
This was actually a lot of that. I knew this individual, and I figured anyway, if you read the Maine State Police Missing Report, you'll find this character kind of.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I figure you can't get me now because he's got to be at least 95.
You know, I'm sitting here listening to you talk, and I'm amazed at, I could be honest with you, I don't think of a soil conservationist as having that imagination that you have.
Oh.
Did you write in college? Were you, minor in literature?
I'm glad you said that.
No.
Again, it was kind of intimidating because when I did the first book, I read people's bios, even like yours. I mean, you're a journalist.
Yeah.
You've got this background.
Yeah.
English teachers are right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they have all this, you know, creative writing experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't have that.
No.
So when I did this.
Were you a storyteller when you were younger, before you get into writing?
Only to my parents.
Yeah. You were a storyteller?
Yeah. Making up stories.
You obviously have a wicked appetite for history.
Well, I like it, yeah.
And your digging is what's giving you the right. fuel to fuel these books.
Right.
Fantastic.
I like this era of history, and I like revolutionary history and what's happened in Western Maine because you can still see it. As I mentioned in—
Still see what?
Well, you still see it's not developed.
Yeah.
It's not, trees are smaller, different composition, but it's not on the hot top a lot.
Yeah.
Like Arnold's Route. I mean, yeah, it exists, and some of it coincides the Appalachian Trail. Yeah. Some of it goes down a dirt road, but it's still there. To me, history in Portland, it's under hot top concrete, and you know, you see a few buildings, but you get the feel. You can walk around.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's I just like that.
Yeah. We're going to take a short break, and I have some other questions to shoot to you. And the folks at home, it's 1-800-966-1039 if you want to call in. And we have a very important message, don't we, Catherine?
We do. It's from General Appliance Services. It is now owned and operated by Gary Coleman, who's been doing service work for General Appliance for 35 years. Nothing has changed. Rebuilt appliances available, parts and service for all makes and models, always reliable, giving you complete support after the sale. You owe it to yourself to come see our gas appliances for your camp, gas refrigeration, gas lights, gas freezers, gas ranges, and Norm's personal favorite, the composting toilet.
Ride the wave, baby.
Come visit us at our new location just two doors up, still here serving first-class customer service at 103 Center Street, Brewer, Maine.
All right, thank you. Norman, do you have a compost toilet at your camp on West Cary?
No, first class. We have a septic system.
You have a septic
system? We started with a back house.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
And
yeah.
But as we got in, after a few years we were there, we decided, make everybody happy, put in a flush toilet. So we did that.
You know, the Hunt Club that I've belonged to for 50 years plus, have an outhouse, which we've used for years, and they were going to build a double holer, but they decided against that. And I guess it's all right to talk about outhouses, but anyway, we built a new one last year. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Painted it nice and got a brand new seat on it. And one of the guys went in and put a stink pipe in. So it's a high-end outhouse. And now there's discussion of whether to put some kind of heat in there.
Wow.
And anyway, I digress. Anyway, outhouses can be interesting, too.
It's interesting. We had a, yeah. not sort of like that, similar yeah. thing. But after I put the septic in, former son-in-law refused to use the toilet. If you go to camp, you go out there, you do not.
That's funny.
But he came around after.
Yeah. How long does it take you to write a book like this one, Life in the Backwoods? Roughly how many hours, you know?
Well, basically, I would say altogether, it takes me a long time, probably a year.
What are your?
I don't mean constant.
What are your writing habits? You like write every day for 2 hours, or yep. in the morning, or what do you do?
Most of them, I do most of it in the fall and winter when we're now that we're in St. George.
Okay.
But on this, I have one book left in me. I won't bother going into it. But this one, I really got into. It's going to be historical fiction.
You're working on a sixth book?
Yeah, but it's the grand finale.
What do you mean it's the grand finale?
How do you know it's the grand finale?
Well, I know because every other book I've done, I always knew what I wanted to do next. But right now, the screen is blank.
Oh, is that? Oh, yeah.
So I think, you can't force it. You really can't force it.
Yeah.
So
a little bit of burnout there.
Well, not well. You know, you just run out of
ideas. Yeah,
and you don't want to.
Yeah,
know,
yeah.
Quit on a low note.
Yeah. So, can you give a tip to an aspiring writer like me who's been writing his whole life? I know how to put one word after another, but I can't come up with a good idea. Can you give me a tip or a hint? So, what you're saying is dig into history a little bit if you want to find some good ideas, right?
Just things you. Well, I think it's just things you enjoy doing.
Yeah.
That's the basis of the starting
point. Yeah, yeah.
And then build on that.
Yeah.
And the bodies.
Oh, yeah, you got to get the body, yeah.
In your newest book, there are multiple bodies. Isn't that right? Yeah. Aren't there multiple murders in that new book? It's called...
Oh, Last Hike?
Yes, so The Last Hike.
If one body's good, two bodies are great.
Yes, yes. It kind of keeps multiplying.
Yeah.
Because I just read the little preview on that, and it said like it had murders, drugs, money laundering, weapons, and all kinds of
all
exciting.
That
sounded like a good book to me.
Yeah.
I was very, really lucky. I wrote that last year, and I contacted your guest last week, Carrie Kish.
Yeah.
And I think of a million things to talk about than that. But anyway, I asked him if he would read it and endorse it if he thought it was good. So Carrie did, if you read his writing on the back of Last Hike, then it's more than just a hike.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think we have a caller, so take a call. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with author Norman Kalick. Go ahead.
Hi. My name is Joe Bertolacini.
Oh, wow.
I just want to say that I enjoyed working with Norm. I enjoyed his sense of humor. And I just wanted to know that I'm still barely alive.
Oh, God, it's good to hear you, Joe. Yeah. I'm really, really glad you called in.
Yeah, you ought to read his book, Joe. It's great.
Yeah, good. No, I've got a book out, too, that the fundamentals of fly fishing. That it took me, I don't know, 3 or 4 years to write, but anyway, I enjoy doing it, and stuff like that, it keeps me out of trouble.
Yeah, it keeps you off the streets and out of the bar.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. No, that's...
anyway, hey, really nice to talk to you, Norm.
Go ahead. Well, same here, and thanks for calling. I really appreciate it.
Yep.
I hope you can make it to the retiree breakfast sometime.
Yep, appreciate the call, Joe. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
See you, Joe.
Bye-bye. Yep.
Bye.
All right. One of your fans there, a fellow you work with in soil conservation.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. We have another mutual friend I worked with, Bob Minjetic.
Yeah.
I worked with Bob.
Kidding.
Yep.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah. And I've fished a number of times with Joe.
Oh,
and,
I didn't know that.
And he whipped me in cribbage one time up to a fishing camp. And I said something about, well, at least I'm a good loser, Joe. And he said, Paul, a loser is a loser.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I just mentioned that, sort of related to your question. I think if anybody's listening and they have an idea of this epic novel or whatever. It doesn't have to be a novel. Maybe just whatever. They're interested in short stories. My advice is just do it.
Just do it.
Just do it. I depend on editors. I mean, I feel like I can do a pretty good job of the story, but grammar, and particularly grammar, I wouldn't embarrass myself for not having editors.
So you're talking about the editors at Main Publishing?
Yes. And that's a decent way to go. It's self-publishing. It's independent publishing. And that outfit's in Thomaston, and they'll help you evaluate the manuscript, give you an idea where it needs to be improved, markability. And then you can have one of their tested editors edit it and publish it if that's the way you want to go. But I really think anybody even has an inkling they want to do something is just go ahead and do it.
So it took you a year to do this book, working like a couple hours a day?
Yeah.
And how old were you again when you sat down to write your very first book?
I was...
And the only reason I ask that is because I didn't become a main guide until I was 50.
Ah.
And so I always ask people, I love to see people do things later in life, you know? So I just was curious how old you were when you sat down to write that first book?
Yep. I've been low 70s. Yeah, probably 72, 73. The other one related to that question. I got this newspaper article from my daughter a number of years ago, and it was about deer hunting. She cut it out of the newspaper and sent it up to camp. And I flipped it over, and it was an article by Carrie Kish on hike Tour of Mont Blanc in Switzerland, France, Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So I read that, and I got to think, gee, that would be absolutely great. So Carrie, and I think he still does it, maintains a section of the AT just beyond West Cary. So I contacted him, and I said, I'm thinking of doing it. And he said, well, I'm going to be maintaining the trail. So I met him. Him and his wife, Fran, were set up in a gravel pit, so I went over. And I said, I'm getting pretty long in the tooth. And I said, do you think I could do that? And he said, do it. You can do it. It's not that bad. So I owe Carrie a thanks for promoting that.
And which book was that?
Well, that was the background for Last Tyke.
Oh, okay. Oh,
that's his newest book.
Oh, right. I see.
That's
okay. We're almost out of time here. Real quick, what do we have, a minute and a half, Norm?
Just about.
Yeah. You wanted to put a plug in for the Historical Society, the Benedict Arnold?
Yep.
Can you do that real quick, Norm?
Sure do. Next year is the 205th anniversary of Benedict's invasion of Quebec.
Yeah.
Almost a 14th colony, but he fell short. And we're going to have a celebration. I'm involved in the Arnold Expedition Historical Society.
Oh, that's great.
So if you go to arnoldsmarch.org.
arnoldsmarch.org.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's the website. And you can see the events we've got planned. You can read, read the diaries, more about the trail, which you can visit. And perhaps even want to join the organization.
So there's going to be some kind of a celebration?
Yeah. They've already built one bateau reproduction.
No kidding.
Yep. That would be cool.
Oh, fantastic.
And they're going to want to do four more, and they're going to have them displayed in towns along the route, Skowhegan, anywhere there, and maybe a pavilion.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be kind of a focal point. Plus, we hope to have talks on our reenactment. We've got
30 seconds.
We are out of time. Okay. Thank you, Norman. We appreciate you. You've been a great guest.
Thank you.
Super interesting.
And if you come up with a good idea for me, would you pass it on? If you don't want to write it?
Oh, yeah, I'll send you an email.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much. And again, we commend you to his books. They're wonderful books. I've read one of them, and I like his writing style, and he's got a great sense of history, and I know you'll enjoy it. Life in the Backwoods by Norman Kalik, Jr. Check it out. And we appreciate you being with us tonight, don't we, Catherine?
Absolutely. I was fascinated. I love the history, and I can't wait to read this book.
All right. And next week, our guest is going to be Wild Chef Denny Corvo, who's going to teach you how to cook wild
I
meat.
Need all the help I can get. Okay. I'm looking forward to him coming on the show.
And we'll see you all next week, right here on
the Maine Outdoors.